History Makers with Matt Prater.
Coming off of drugs, you're going to have emotional problems, but I kept chasing after God.
And he's using this vehicle to bring people out of the dark into the light.
And I went forward and I knelt at the front, and it was a radical conversion experience.
And that's where the big change happened, and that's where we decided we're going to use our music for God, we're going to change our songs.
When I was about 25-year-old, I was busted and into jail, and it was there that I came to the Lord.
History Makers with Matt Prater.
Hi, I'm Steve McKenna, filling in for Matt Prater today. I'm the producer for History Makers, and on the line, we've got author Roberta Brown. Hi, Roberta. Welcome to History Makers.
Oh, thanks, Steve.
It's great to catch up with you. Now, I detect a little bit of an accent there, just a little bit.
A little bit.
I think you may have some Scottish background.
Yes, I was born in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. But to put a twist on it, when I was two, my parents migrated to Canada.
All right.
So I was also brought up in Canada, in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 13, we went back to Scotland. My dad wanted to go back there. And I don't think my mum did. But anyway, we ended up back there. And I did all my high schooling in Scotland, in Fife. Right.
So you grew up in Scotland and then in Canada for a little while and then schooling in Scotland. And did you grow up with a Christian faith?
Yes, my mum and dad, they've always been Christians, and I'm sure their families were too. They used to date in Glasgow and go to the tent hall meetings.
Oh,
of the
right.
Visiting evangelists.
Yes.
So they would sit up the back holding hands, I imagined.
Oh, that's great.
And then they decided to come to Australia, and I was 19, and we were 10 pound Scots.
10 pound Scots.
Because they still had that program running back in 1974.
Yes.
So we went in style. We got the Australis. We had a 3-week holiday on an ocean liner.
Yes.
Coming down the coast of Africa and across the Indian Ocean to Perth.
So I think my parents came across on the Oriana, from memory.
And
so
it was
similar
quite
sort of story.
Amazing trip, yeah. I think my first impressions of Fremantle were that the water was so blue and the sky was so blue compared to sort of, leaving Southampton where it was pretty overcast and miserable.
Yeah.
So it was quite a lot of differences.
And
in
maybe
Perth,
just a little bit warmer
very
too.
Isolated too.
Yeah.
Very warm. It was very warm. I was nursing in Scotland and I reapplied to finish my training in Perth. And I met my husband in Perth, funnily enough, and he was actually Canadian.
Right.
So that's why my accent is a touch Canadian as well as Scottish. So I found a Canadian in Australia. That's pretty rare, I think.
A Scots lady finding a Canadian
on the
in Australia.
Golden Bachelor.
There we go. We'll keep it international. Absolutely. And so you came to Australia and you started nursing here in Australia. How long did you do that for?
I nursed quite a few years at Sir Charlie Gardner's Hospital in Perth. When I had my children, I stopped. I tried to work when I had two, but it was hard and I just felt like I should be at home with them.
Hi, I'm Steve McKenna, filling in for Matt Prater today. I'm the producer for History Makers. And on the line, we've got author Roberta Brown. So, Roberta, you mentioned that your husband passed away and you were a mum as well. What happened there?
Well, my husband was older than me, quite a few years older. But what happened was he had trouble with his eyesight. He just went for a normal eye exam. And the optometrist was a bit concerned about something and sent him for an MRI, and they found a brain tumor, and it was on the pituitary gland, and it was also affecting his sight. It's on the optic nerve.
Yeah.
It was a benign tumor, but the thing was he was going blind. Also, it affected all his hormones, so they didn't want to do anything immediately. They left it for like 6 months, but he started to get confused. He'd say things, didn't make sense. He was seeing people in the room and talking to them and things like that. So, and even when we went, I took him to the doctor, he thought I was there because I had the problem.
Right.
And so the doctor knew there was something not right. And so he ended up in the Royal Brisbane Hospital for tests. And we all decided, I guess, that we didn't think there was any option but surgery. But in hindsight, I think we could have left it. And they could replace hormones, you know, and he would have been fine. But his eyesight would have deteriorated further. So anyway, he had an operation. He came through it, but he ended up with a stroke. So he had a stroke and his eyesight was actually worse.
Right.
And he had no motivation to get up and get moving. And he was just lying in bed most of the time, sleeping. Even when I went to visit, it was difficult. I couldn't. But before the operation, you know, we'd visit him with the children and he'd say, oh, Roberta, there's a lady here who wants prayer for her back or something. So I'd be praying. And I'd say, I'm here to see you, not pray for everybody on the ward. But anyway, he loved to talk. He was just a great personality. He was so full of energy and positivity. And he was just one of those, you don't forget him if you spoke to him.
Right.
Because he was just really, he was a born salesman too. He'd been a salesman. Do you know he sold land on the Gold Coast in the 60s?
Oh, right.
And I said, well, why didn't you buy something? So we would have been millionaires by now. Anyway, he didn't. He was a salesman, right? That's what he did.
Yeah.
The kids have fond memories of him. And it didn't matter what job he did. He always had a funny story to tell. So he was larger than life. And he had a lovely, his accent was, it was Canadian, not American, but just that nice, soft Canadian.
There is a distinct difference.
There is a difference, yes. Some people don't pick it up. But so anyway, the hospital informed me that he was going to be transferred to Nambour Hospital for rehabilitation the following week. And that weekend, I saw him on the Friday. I couldn't get him to wake up. He wouldn't wake up, so I didn't get to speak to him. The one positive thing was his sister in Canada rang him. And he got to speak to her, and it was a Monday evening, and he developed a pulmonary embolism in his lung, and they couldn't revive him. That was it. It was more or less that stops your heart working, stops your lungs working. It's just, and they tried for an hour to revive him. So I got a call to say, Mrs. Brown, you know, don't rush, but I think you need to come to the hospital. You know, something occurred. And so I had to leave my kids behind, and we'd just been delivered pizza from our Baptist church. So they had dinner, and they knew I had to go to the hospital. And he had been in intensive care after the operation, but had been moved to the ward. But they actually took me into the intensive care unit.
Right.
When I got there, and I'm sitting in a waiting room, and I just felt the room spinning around me. Because I knew that there was something not good. It wasn't good.
Yeah.
And then when they came in and said that, we're sorry, but your husband's passed away. So yeah, but you know what? I went in and saw him, and the scar from the operation was faded, and he just looked so peaceful. And he just looked, you know, just really at rest. And I know that he was with the Lord, you know, and and that was special, but it was fun. It was strange. One thing that happened was when I was visiting him, he would be saying things like, "Roberta, you know, I'm asking the nurses what they get paid, and I think it would be a good idea to go back to nursing." And then he'd say something like he was an entrepreneur. He owned a lot of rental homes in Perth.
Yeah.
And things. I think his business didn't do well in the end. And he'd talk about what the kids should be doing as if he was preparing us. And it was just one of those things, you know, you just look back and you think, wow, like it's like God was telling me something then.
Yeah.
Because he passed away that night. But anyway, we had to get on with our lives. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, you can imagine the scene.
Yes, for sure.
I got back to the house in the early morning, and I told my eldest son, who was 16 at the time, because he was the oldest at home. And I told him on the phone. I wish I hadn't. I wish I hadn't, because he had to bear that news himself. But I thought he should know that his dad had passed away. Anyway, the rest of the children were sitting around the table, and I had to tell them that their dad wasn't coming home. And that was really hard. And I think my daughter, who had the problem with the drugs, that was one of the moments she'll never forget. I think that was, well, I don't think any of them would forget it. But you know, it's hard enough for an adult to bear that. But for children, it's, you know, it's hard.
Hi, I'm Steve McKenna, filling in for Matt Prater today. I'm the producer for History Makers. And on the line, we've got author Roberta Brown. So, Roberta, you talk about your children. How many children do you have?
I've got 8 children.
8 kids. Wow.
8 kids, yeah.
Wow. And you managed for a long time, obviously, on your own with those kids.
Yes. Well, the older two were at university then. They were 18 and 20. But I had 6 at home still, yes, so...
Yeah.
And the youngest were 7-year-old twins, Joseph and Ben.
Right.
7. And then Leah was 10 and Sarah was 11. Sarah was at school captain at Birwell Primary School at the time. And
okay.
I had Jacob and Aaron. They were at high school.
They obviously took the news of their dad's passing quite hard.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. It's just hard to gauge how your kids are doing, really. And it might not be apparent right away. It might be something that manifests down the track, you know?
Yes, for sure.
Like it did with my daughter. You know, it's not always evident to start with. I mean, I was offered counseling by the government, though we had a church family. That was a great thing. You know, I had a lot of, and then I started going to another little church in Glasshouse, and it was lovely. You know, I had a lot of caring people around me, and I just spoke to a friend who's just read my book. She didn't realize the impact of what I went through until she read my story. It's like, you know, people, but you don't really know what they're going through.
Absolutely.
So she was sort of saying, oh, I wish we'd been, you know, there for you more. I said, well, they were there for me. They were all there for me. There's only so much you can do, you know.
Now, you mentioned your book called A Mother's Wilderness Journey. Message in the book is the battle for my daughter. And you mentioned that your daughter ended up having an addiction to a substance.
She was a Christian growing up. I mean, my kids were, we brought them up in the Lord. But I think it took its toll when she lost her father. She's a very high achieving person. She's very hard on herself, I think, too. She sort of expects a lot from herself. And she, as I said, she was school captain of Birwell Primary School. Her dad died in June. At the end of the year, she gave her end of year speech. She was the sports champion that year and the ducks of the school. So that shows you how focused she was, you know, on her sports and her academic. And it wasn't till high school, you know, teenage years and not having her father to affirm her and a lot of things, you know, high expectations of herself. There's things that she will write about one day, but I'm just saying from my point of view, I realized things weren't going well. And my book opens when I'm at work one day at the hospital. And I actually was nursing a young lady who had taken an overdose of tablets. And mom and dad were very worried. And I thought, oh, I'm glad I don't have to face that, you know. And later that morning, I actually got a call from the high school to say my daughter had taken some pain-killing tablets.
Yeah.
And they were worried about her. And so that was a bit of a wake-up call. I think that's where you start with what sort of triggered your awareness of things weren't really going that well. I thought everything was going well with the kids, you know, at that stage.
Yeah.
So I was aware that things weren't right. So, You know, I was started praying for her then, you know, and when she was in year 12, things looked up when she met a lovely young man, and he was the school captain, and she was a prefect, and you could see that they'd just gone on so well, and they were so happy, and but things, life happens, doesn't it? And we get
Yeah, it does.
disappointment, and there was a couple of big disappointments happened. She didn't make it into QUT for her dance program because she had no ballet training. And then her boyfriend, who she was really attached to, went to Brazil for a year on a, you know, an exchange. It was planned long before him and Sarah even met. So he went away for a year. She's lost her chance to do her dancing degree at university, and she just started to fall apart a bit. And all the old hurts came back, I think, and all the problems, you know, of her not having her father. So anyway, that sort of sent a little spiral. She ended up working on a strawberry farm, met people that were, you know, they were drug users and things, and then ended up at Bundaberg. And she meets a young man there, and he's dysfunctional too. And he is the actual boss at the farms. And she has an accident, and he rescues her, takes her to hospital, and so on. And that began this codependent relationship with him. He had been on and off meth for a long time. It was a bit of a shock, and I think the worst thing you can dream of. I was with my other children at an athletics carnival, and I got a text message to say, "I'm a drug addict, mum." And that's the worst case scenario, I think, for a Christian parent, for any parent, but for a Christian parent, because she had given her life to Jesus, she had been baptized, she had given her testimony. So you just don't understand how these things come about. But I understand now, as I learn about spiritual warfare, the trauma that she had as a child, it allows things into your spirit that are
Absolutely.
not of God. And it's like a fracture, isn't it? It's like, you know, or a broken heart or something. It's just, and then that affects your life until you work through it. I said, "Lord, I'm praying for her. I don't know how to pray. Show me how to pray." And the next week at my little church at Glasshouse, there was some leaflets from a group called Oz Challenge, and they taught spiritual warfare practices. So I believed it was from the Lord, and so I went along and I learned as much as I could, and I put things into practice. You know, I declared the word of God over her, and I worshipped, and as you know, and I just prayed. I cover and bound every spirit that might be causing, you know, the addictions and things. However God led me, I prayed for her. So, and I did it intensely. It was like, I'm going to lose this girl. I don't want to lose her. God's got a plan for her life. And I do believe that the more the enemy tries to come against you, the greater the plan is. And so I loved her right through it. But, you know, I would say to her, she'd come home sometimes and I'd say, "Sarah, you belong to God. You belong to Jesus. And no matter what you do or where you go, He's going to be there. And your life's not going to be easy, because He's going to put blockages, and He's going to make sure, because He wants you home with Him. He wants you home with your here." And I made that clear. You know, I loved her. I didn't want her to perish. But she did go through some rough times, you know, some near things with drugs and things. God just had his hand on her. He always had his hand on her. But it was still painful, and it was still tough, you know.
And she's got through the other
And
side now, and
she came through the other side much quicker than most people on drugs would have. And she had no
amazing.
rehabilitation. She never went to rehab, believe it was the praying. She ended up, you know, pregnant, and by then she was ready. She thought, "I've got to do everything to look after this baby." And she gave up everything. She stopped smoking, drinking, drugs. I think she was already on that path, but I think that was the impetus for her to really, she wanted this baby. And and she's such a blessing. What a beautiful girl she is. And so she saved mom's life, really. And then she went to, while she was pregnant, she went to something called Mercy Ministries in
Yes.
Sydney. And Sarah got offered a place for 6 months. And part of me wanted to keep her at home, but
Yeah.
I knew that she needed to go. I knew that she needed to go. They had a Bible program. It was a year, but she did it in 6 months. And she had Bible. She knew the Bible a bit. And she knew, you know, she'd been a Christian. So
Yeah.
it wasn't hard for her. That was very much needed because she could have slipped back. You know, she needed to get at the heart of the problem.
For sure.
And addiction is only a symptom of deeper issues. And so when you look at an addict, you've got to say, what's going on behind the addiction?
Yes.
What is deeper? What are they struggling with? Are they struggling with rejection? Rejection is at the heart of our young people today,
yeah,
and why they rebel.
For sure.
And so I you know, that is what they're crying out for help.
Yep.
They're crying out for someone to say you're worth something. God loves you. You know, you've got a lot of potential. Instead, they're ending up, you know, in jail and in places where they don't belong.
Well, Roberta, it's been great to talk to you today. And your book, A Mother's Wilderness Journey and the Fight for Your Daughter. And your book available through all the regulars, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Arkhouse Press, and soon to come online at Koorong Online. So, Roberta, just wish you all the best with your 8 kids and all you do. And your book, of course. I think you're a history maker. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Steve.
If you'd like to hear this conversation again, listen online anytime at historymakersradio.com. There you'll also find links to all of our social media channels, and you can subscribe to our iTunes podcast. History Makers is a faith-based ministry, and we want to thank everyone for their generous support. If you've got a suggestion of anyone we should interview, send us an email, info@historymakersradio.com. God bless. I'm Matt Prater, and my challenge to you now is to go and make history.
Looking for fashion that feels like you? Kindred Boutique is where style meets heart. From effortlessly chic outfits to those little details that make all the difference, Kindred Boutique curates pieces you'll love wearing again and again. Thoughtfully chosen, beautifully made, perfect for every day and special moments. Because at Kindred Boutique, it's not just about clothes, it's about connection. Discover your new favourites at Kindred Boutique. Shop online now at kindredboutique.com.au. Find your style, find your people.